Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to www.transparency.help. My name is Evinda Leppins, and I'm delighted to be here with you today. Love this form of accountability, not to mention it is my time of sanity with Steve, and I'm so glad we have Steve. How was your weekend?
Well, it was good. I was just telling you, Evinda, my grandson, 2 years old, and daughter are here, so we went to the beach, and the weather was just amazing. I feel like I burnt more than I realized because it was just felt cool, but they said it was the temperature, so the breeze, it was just very, very. So my grandson says, oh, no more beach, no more camper, no, that's a bummer.
Your grandson said that's a bummer? Yeah, oh, my gosh, did you laugh? That sounds just like his grandpa. That's so funny.
That was so great.
That's
a
bummer.
We had a great time.
Okay, so today we are going to wrap up the rage, hopefully. And bring it to a boil. No, I'm just kidding. We are going to just touch on the two tanks. Everybody has two tanks, and then we're going to move on to denial. But we are going to talk about the truth that everybody has two tanks. One is a tank that needs to be emptied. The other is a tank that needs to be full. And oftentimes, again, using the emotional dashboard analogy, you know, when you get in your car, if you have a little blinker that goes on or a little light that goes on, I ask.
They're called idiot lights.
Yeah, they're idiot lights, and they really are because I have to look in my manual because I had one go on the other day. I didn't know what the heck it was for. And so instead of looking in the manual, I asked George to tell me what it was. And anyways, it was my tire. But when we blow right by the signals and we don't pay attention to them, you know, in the car, you know, we're going to get a flat, we're going to run out of gas, whatever. But we can't do that with emotional dashboard and expect nothing to happen. And so there are two tanks. There's the pressure tank or the stress tank, and then there's the emotional well-being tank, or I forget, what do they call that other tank? Or is there a name for it? The one that needs to be filled.
Or the love tank.
The love tank, okay, and then the stressor tank. The one.
Right.
Okay, so the love tank, it's interesting that if that is not getting fueled, filled, touched daily, doesn't it affect stress tank?
Well, in fact, the lifeblood of a relationship, marriage especially, is two or three times a day at least you affirm something about your mate.
Okay, so I told this person she has to do it at least once a day. So I know that person's on the air, so now I'm going to tell her, look at two or three times. I changed that answer.
Yeah, how sad that we can notice, and of course it's a reaction. It's a shame that we're not equally sensitized to when someone does something for us that's loving.
Yeah, right.
That we can actually love them back. I mean, we kind of take the good for granted, but we won't miss the negative. We will say something, and by not saying something is saying something. So either way, we keep it in and hurt ourselves and then them, or we react to something and hurt them. So
yeah,
we need to at least do one. Again, I share, the kid mows the lawn perfectly and leaves the lawnmower out in the rain. And of course, we make a big, big emotional deal over that lawnmower, but we didn't make a big, big emotional deal over the yard being mowed perfectly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the messaging with us is, yeah, that tank, sadly, is the one that needs to be less full, the negative areas we feel about ourselves and towards each other, and then the positive, yes.
And, you know, it's a real slippery slope. What I mean by that is you could go days without anything touching that love tank and not really be aware of it until all of a sudden, kind of like being in a car that has a tire that's almost flat, suddenly you find yourself being pulled over, you know, just, and it's like, what the heck is going on here? And I know, for me, the last couple of weeks, I know that I've been a little bit more edgy, and I've not affirmed George as much as I probably should affirm George, because my own love tank has been...
Well, which doesn't mean that's even about George.
No, it's me.
But we drain. You know, we're very, you know, type A personalities. We're always on the move. We are always getting stimulated, and we're kind of distractible, actually. when some of these things, however conscious we are, I don't think there's much natural about them. Christ purposed to come and love us. He emptied himself, and he purposed to come down here to let us know how important we were to him. It's been 3 years doing it. Well, 33 years, but mm-hmm. I don't know that we purpose well in our marriages. When I first got married, no one ever told me they had loved me as a child. I didn't express that word very easily or often.
So would you say you needed to hear it more because of that?
Well, surely I needed to hear it more because of that, but that wasn't an excuse for me not to express myself to my wife. And so I would write down on a calendar, when I got my new calendar for the year, I would kind of dot the map of the year.
Okay.
And so I would say, okay, call your wife and tell her you love her right now. This kind of precedes the Love Dare book almost.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't quite as formal, but it looked spontaneous to her.
Because it was, you needed that to trigger in you, and so did it become easier?
Well, yes, because it's way more natural now. I'm very affirming with her now.
No, yeah, I know.
But yeah, it's become easier, but it took practice. I've been married 35 plus 6 years of life, you know, and hopefully you... And that's not something you stop doing. It's something that needs to be an everyday ongoing.
But is filling somebody else's love tank actually also part of filling your own?
Couldn't
it kind of spill over into that?
Well, you know, a buddy of mine gave a Christmas gift to his wife, and it was a writing or journaling
mm-hmm.
every day. And at Christmas time, he gave her 365 days of affirming.
I love that.
Well, I took that model, and I gave one to Gail a year ago.
You did?
Only it was once a week. Yes, I would journal once a week. We only saw each other 3 days of the week.
Yeah.
So, but because I did that, I was much more sensitive around her.
Hmm.
So, because I was more conscious of the mission I was on.
Yeah.
And so, because I was that focused, it made it easier to be aware of the things that she did that were good and valued versus things that might have irritated me or frustrated me.
So that's what the journal was about, things. Kind of like a thank gratitude journal.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, it's a love journal. So, like, again, a love dare kind of thing where we need to purpose one way or the other, whether it's a journal you would write or it's just today I'm going to. And it's almost like fasting. You know, it's almost like you are more conscious of yourself when you make these goals
mm-hmm.
for yourself. And I think you need to make them goals because I don't think there's anything natural about loving someone spontaneously all the time. Because we have moods, we don't necessarily have to be unloving to not be loving, because we're occupied, we're tired, we're frustrated, things get into our head. As you said, there's days go by, you
yeah.
say little or nothing to each other that's affirming or loving. And so, yeah, who are we about and what are we about? But I think any of this stuff we're talking about is very uncommon in our marriages, uncommon in our lives.
And so we do have to practice it. So what are some good ways... What are some practical ways, I should say, that we should be filling our own love tank? Like mine, personally, I know that I couldn't do everything that he accomplishes through me without me meeting with him first thing in the morning. That fills my tank.
Right.
But I'm beginning to realize that I need to like be kind of checking that tank at the end of the day because it's pretty depleted by the end of the day. But what are some practical things we can do to fill our love tank?
Well, what you just mentioned are habits.
Right.
You know, what are habits? And I think when you are a victim of an abuser, a physical abuser, and women are usually the abused, and they somehow are verbally and physically affected by someone, and then they get beat up, they leave, and then they want to go back. And we're always in wonder, you know, that you're a victim of this. And so what I recommend to them is to make a journal of things that remind them of why they're not with them in the first place. Well, if we take that model and journal for ourselves, what has God done, you know, and what has he done for us, and what are gifts he's given us, and how has he met our needs? I think we need to reflect, you know, in the Old Testament, the Israelites would make memorials. They would make monuments to the big deals that God did on a given day. And it says so that when their children come by, that they can be told the memory of this event that God had done in their lives. And I don't think we're appreciative enough of the things God does, because if you want a sense of what forward's going to look like, we need to have a map that we look back and see
right.
God having worked.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only is it that we spend time with God on a daily basis, reminding ourselves that He loves us, but we need to remind ourselves of all the things that He has done consistently to show us He cares. And so I just don't think we're good at the discipline.
And it does take discipline. I mean, it is something I do every day. And I want to plug this one book that I'm reading, a devotional that I'm reading every morning. It's called A Thousand Gifts.
A Thousand Gifts.
A Thousand Gifts.
And who's that by?
And I'll bring it to you next week. I totally have
okay, great.
Part
a
right
Thousand
now.
Gifts.
It's amazing.
I'll write it down.
It really does bring out of your heart things that you can be thankful for. But it's a practice I've had for many years where I kind of rewind the day before. And I thank Him for those God moments, those moments that I know that He got me through, the moments where maybe I didn't even recognize it then, but I'm able to recognize it now. They're very, very important because besides the word meekness, I'm wanting to have an attitude of gratitude this year as well. And so that's a really good way to get into, you know, filling your love tank. I think that's a real practical.
Well, if we're serious about these things, and I know that this takes a lot of steps that we would not naturally put into our lives, but we need an accountability with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And we need, and again, if we're accountable, it's much like if I'm going to work out at the gym with someone, I'm probably most likely going to show up to work out with someone. If I'm doing it by myself, then the bed might feel good and I'll sleep in today and do twice workout tomorrow. I mean, it's just, it's all mental excuse making.
But here's what's funny. I'm doing something else to fill my love cup, although I didn't know that that's what it was going to do. I'm back to school for my bachelor's in ministry and I'm taking a leadership class and I have to read 4 books by the end of April. This one book that I'm reading is called In the Name of Jesus by Henry Nguyen.
Nguyen.
Anyways, amazing, amazing book. And he talks about the 2x2. You know, many times Jesus himself taught, you know, 2 are better than 1 because when 1 falls,
sure.
Okay? Then how about if you ask anything in my name with someone else, where two or more gathered. So that he was teaching on the leadership principle that we don't lead alone.
Sure.
You know, and so we do need that form of accountability. So that's another way to fill up your love tank, I think, is having someone that you can, that can hear you, that can listen.
Well, not only are they going to hear and listen, you need to commit to them what you want to commit to.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, a simple thing, if you want to love your husband, you know, I need to say something nice to him or I need to express in some way nice to him. And I want you to ask me about that, or a husband. You know, I need to take my wife on a date at least once every other week, or I need to say more things that are affirming of her. So I want you to check with me and see if I'm doing it. And that's why the 12-step programs are great, because you, every week, you know, you're reflecting on, you're meeting, you're being reminded. I don't think the church does this well. And so because of that, we don't have a model, even when we're in our churches, to follow. But I think if we don't purpose to do it and we aren't accountable for it, it will not last very long.
Mm-mm.
And so that's the critical piece. And, of course, the thing we're into is denial. And it's interesting.
The empty tank, the stress tank.
Well,
can we touch on the stress tank? And then we'll go into denial.
Okay, we did the love tank. Okay,
yeah,
the stress tank.
Yeah, we got to do the one that needs to be emptied. Okay.
The one that needs to be emptied.
If you're a scorekeeper, you really need to be paying attention to that tank. Okay, in other words, somebody that's keeping score of everything that someone is doing to push your button. You know, I personally right now I'm having a tough time with my honey. You know, he's not working, and so because he's not working, he's feeling a little bit of angst. And so because he's feeling a little bit of angst, he wants to get over into my car and tell me how to do things because he doesn't feel like he has a sense of purpose.
Sharing is caring.
Yeah, exactly. So I get all that, and so I'm trying really hard not to be a scorekeeper and not let that tank get filled up, if you will. So it's really important to acknowledge the stress tank.
Right.
So what are some ways to empty it? Well, let me give you another example. Just going to tell on myself all over here again. So about a week and a half ago, you know, for those of you who know me, my son and his beautiful family moved to Texas. And a year ago, it'll be a year in August. Oh, my goodness. So we were going to Skype. So we planned on Skyping, and he told me when, what time, whatever. So that was great. Got on Skype, and immediately I come to life, you know, just inside. I'm so excited to see the kids. And I'm not as excited to talk to my son and my daughter-in-law because I'm a little annoyed that, you know, I have to beg to make this happen. So, but I'm good. It's like as soon as I see them, it all melts away. Okay, so my tank is being full. So then I'm talking to my grandkids, and they're very distracted, and Mom is saying, you guys, you need to be paying attention to Nana right now instead of Daddy and Zelda. So I didn't realize it until after we got off of our phone conversation, after I talked with both Jeff and Lauren, that the entire time that I was on the phone with these kids, that Jeff, the dad, my son, was playing on the darn TV a video game. So the more I thought about it, the pisser I got. And yes, I said pisser on the radio, but I was really frustrated. And so that was really in my tank, if you will. And so instead of allowing that to push a button and for me to throw up all over him, I actually took a step back. It remained in my tank, but I prayed through it. And I thought, how is it that I could let him know that that offended me? Because he didn't do it on purpose, and I was able to kind of rationalize and work through it.
Well, the extreme is you had the problem.
Right, it wasn't his, it was mine.
He was fine playing on the game while the kids were distracted. He didn't mind doing that at the moment.
So it wasn't until, I think it was two days later, actually it was last Monday night. Monday after I got out of here, I texted him. I said, son, I have something really important to share with you. I was wondering if you could give me a call or let me know when we can talk. So he gave me a time, and he actually called me about 10, 15 minutes before the scheduled time.
Wow.
And so, which was really like, wow, he must know. He must have thought, well, I wonder what mom's, what's up? So I just said, you know what, son, I just wanted to tell you, I know you're not aware of this, but you stepped on my foot, it really hurt, and I need to tell you why and how. Mm. So I explained to him how it really hurt my heart that, you know, I don't get to see the kids, and when I get to Skype with them, I really want them all in, and knowing that Dad is playing on the video games and distracting them really stepped on my foot and made me say, ow. And you could have heard a pin drop. Huh. Now, the old Jeff would have been all over it, and even George said, man, he really received that, because the old Jeff would have been going off, as you know.
Yeah.
And so instead, he was silent for about 10, 15 seconds, and he said, wow, Mom, I am so sorry.
Wow.
I didn't even realize that, and had you not brought it up, I probably would have done it again.
Wow.
So
that's cool.
That emptied my tank.
That was cool.
While it filled, as crazy as that sound, it filled the love tank up as well, because it was healthy communication, and it emptied the stress tank, because it was in there kind of gurgling, and I was, you know, it was really bothering me. So there, what are some other practical ways that we can empty
and for him to say, well, and for him to say he was sorry.
Yeah, it was fabulous.
Phil put something in. That values you.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we have to acknowledge we're having this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think we make our problems other people's stuff. And so it's almost like, well, I wasn't in a bad mood until you said something.
Yeah, so we make our stuff. Okay, we make our problems.
Yeah, we blame. And that's another thing in recognition of how well will I do something without accountability.
Yeah.
Well, how well will I do without admitting, which goes into the denial issue, but how well am I, how aware am I that I have these moods and I am snappy and I am short-fused and I don't do really well when I first get home from work? And all that proves is that you're human.
Yeah.
You have limits, and you acknowledge those. And if you're in doubt about them, can you ask people around you, how do I come across? How do you feel? I'm on a shared, my kids are 15, they're a year apart, so I went 2 different years in a row. And I went on a dad-child retreat, one boy, one girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole goal of that retreat, and if I thought about it earlier, I might have made it more common, as I'm suggesting now. But the whole goal of that weekend was to ask him how their dad was doing. What kind of dad am I? Have I done things? Am I doing things? And, of course, I'm not sure that they were prepared for that. And had they known, maybe they would have had a better answer, because their answers were positive. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, be it that they would even think you could tell your dad that there's things about you, Dad, that bug me, or there's things, you know, when you're snappy and those kinds of things. But am I open to hearing?
Yeah, am I a safe place? Now, in the chat room,
yes.
She says, I get tripped up here because I was raised to think that sharing why someone hurt you just causes more hurt and it's not worth doing. Can you please? I said, it's how you share that makes the difference.
Well, listen to this. How can a person, first of all, know? Speak the truth. By the way, Ephesians 4, about the 15th, 16th verse, it starts earlier in that chapter talking about 5 different roles for the equipping of the saints. There's the pastor, there's the evangelist, there's a teacher, and 2 others. But later in that same chapter, it says that we need to speak the truth in love for the proper working of each individual part. Okay, how does that translate? Mm-hmm. Well, how would I know I'm not working very well if you don't tell me how what I just did was hurtful to you? I don't know. I can't see these things in a mirror. And so when you were raised to think that sharing why someone hurt you, well, how would I know what to change? Mm-hmm. I mean, what does a wife say? You're never home. Okay, is that even a question?
Yeah. It's an accusation.
Well, yeah. And then, of course, the man stays home, and now he's home. Oh, you're on the TV, huh? Now, you're not telling him how it affects you, so it makes the person being on the television look like they're doing something wrong.
So, in other words, addressing your feeling, your need versus their action is right.
Well, that's why I emphasized Jeff had no clue. He was enjoying himself on the computer while you were on the phone with his kids. He had no clue there was any hurt going on. And to tell somebody they're hurting you is an accusational. It's information.
Right.
Oh, by the way, you didn't see what you were doing, but I just need to let you know, since you tell me you love me, mm-hmm. how would I know, how would my mate know how to love me unless I can tell them how to love me? Mm-hmm. Most of us love in ways we want to be loved. And there's five love languages, or the book. Of course, there's more than that, but they give you these broad brushes, and one of those is, okay, the three that stand out are the most critical is time, words, and touch.
Yeah.
Now, in the meantime, your husband touches you a lot because that's his need, and most of us give what we want. Now, in the meantime, you'd like me to sit down and talk to you, but you can't tell him you're hurt if he does what he does. So the rest of his life, he's happy with you not being happy because you haven't told him you're not happy, and he gets to have all the sex he wants or touch you as often as he wants. In the meantime, you're miserable, but it's a good Christian thing not to tell them the truth.
But what happens if you do tell them they're not getting the message?
Well, first of all, you need to start with, I know you can't see what you're doing, and I know you're not doing anything on purpose. Mm-hmm. But if you want to love me, when you say, I love you, honey, does that mean I love you the way I want to love you, or am I loving you the way you want to be loved? Mm-hmm. How can we know unless we use words? So, in fact, words are the only pure form of communication. Everything else is manipulation.
Nice.
Unless I've said it to you directly. So for the wife to say, wow, honey, you're not home a lot. Okay, thank you for sharing. I'm glad you're keeping score on my time. Great.
Yeah.
But we're not telling him to remind him that he's not home a lot. We're telling him because we would like him home more.
Right, just like we did in the comfort circle, which was really powerful.
What do you need? Emotion is need-driven. So if you're hurting, you have a need. However, you're free to share it or even know what it is. But if I'm loving my mate, I'm resentful of her if she has needs and she doesn't tell me that.
Right.
Then I'm not loving her the way she wants to be loved, and I'm wasting my time, you know, doing nothing really.
So would you say, you know, for those of us who, you know, do explain what it is that we need.
Right.
And do we have to keep the broken record thing in our mind? Because for one, you know, there's a particular area in our marriage that I do keep explaining, this is not working, I need you to do it a different way. And sometimes I do explain what I need.
Sure.
Okay, because I try to draw the picture. I don't want you to do it this way, but if you could try it this way, and still not getting it, so is my role then to just keep up the broken record without resentment?
Well,
to empty that stress tank.
Well, that would be, depending on the category, because some of these areas feel violating. Some of these areas feel rejectable. And so for you to violate yourself, it's great in theory that I can love my mate and let go of what they don't intend and tell myself they're not the person who hurt me before. And that's all great mentally, but when it comes to emotions, we would be lying to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we're lying to our mate to tell them it's okay that you can keep doing the things that cause me to feel violated. Mm. And so it's a tough. And therefore, by the fourth or fifth time, you would say to your mate, you know, honey, I understand that maybe you're struggling with not doing what I've asked you not to do. Mm-hmm. But if I let you do that, I'm going to resent you because I'm telling you it's okay to keep doing it. And so can we go to counseling maybe? Yeah. We need to go to talk. Maybe I'm not saying it right, but I'm lying to you to tell you I'm just going to let you keep doing it.
Yeah, and that's a good way.
That's kind of a self-violation.
Yeah, so, and then another comment in the chat room, words even in the past were used to get what the other person wanted, and I'm thinking, but is that how you use them? So you just got to concentrate on how you use them, right?
Well, that's right. You have to use words to get what you want.
Yes.
But when you use words, you have to accept the fact that the person you're asking that from may not be willing, able, or wanting to give you all of what you're asking. So it feels like we got two things going here. Number one is, if there's hurt in your life, mm-hmm. and you haven't told the person that what they do hurts you, then that's one ability to communicate, and that's one you need to do. This last statement sounds like you also need words to communicate with your mate what you need or what you want. But I can't tell. Words, even in the past, were used to get what the other person wanted.
And I think she's basing that on a previous relationship, a broken relationship, where words were used to manipulate. Definitely.
Oh, if what you're saying is they used words to get what they wanted, which basically they used words to manipulate me, mm-hmm. then once you know that, you need to use words.
Which now leads into denial. This is really a good segue into denial.
Well, this would be the denial thing, because if you confronted someone and if they say, no, I'm not, because mm-hmm. a lot of times we're accusatory in our presentation.
Yep.
You're just doing that to manipulate me. And instantly, of course, denial is not something anybody sees or is conscious of. Now, maybe they are conscious, but once they say, no, I'm not, then you say, well, I'm glad to hear that, because I felt manipulated, but now I realize you're not trying to manipulate me, then I'm going to speak my words.
Okay, so this is interesting. She says this is about damage from being with someone with a personality disorder and trying not to think everyone is the same. And so this is curious. We're now starting to actually give you the framework for denial. I'm curious to know, while you were in that unhealthy relationship, was there a form of denial regarding the personality disorder, right?
Well,
because that could have caused a lot of
well, the form of denial with anyone with a personality disorder could be called love. I don't want to think someone's trying to manipulate me.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm loving someone, I don't want to have to think, okay, what disorder do you bring?
Yeah.
Now, over time, and sometimes, because people with their personality disorders are easily make it everyone else's faults, or they deny. A personality disordered person does not reason. They are stuck in their own zone of their own thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why a person with a personality disorder who's in a relationship with one has to be very strong themselves, and they are taking advantage, and usually that's how it works, because people attract at the same emotional immaturity level. So a personality disordered person would need someone who's kind of codependent, because the personality disordered person is all about themselves.
Yeah.
And so it's tough, because you are made to feel selfish if you push back. You are made to feel. Yes, you're saying we're not aware until the end of the relationship. That's right. And you feel like you're crazy. You feel like you're made to feel like something's wrong with you. And if you can stay inside your feelings, well, I don't have to prove you have a personality disorder. All I know is, when you behave that way, this is how I'm feeling. Can you change that? Yes or no? And everything comes down to yes or no, but emotions make that very complicated, because when you confront someone with a personality disorder about their behavior, and then you back up, they will escalate.
Oh, yeah.
That's
kind of thing.
Another whole conversation. It would be interesting if you would want to call next week.
Yeah.
While we're on the air.
Or the week after. Next week.
Yes,
in 2 weeks.
For those that are listening, we're not here next week. So it makes this a little more relative to everyone who, when they hear us having this dialogue and hear your half of it, instead of me coming up with your half, my half, and then, so it would be neater if you could make this in real time.
Yeah, so maybe give us a call. In 2 weeks, we'll be on the air. But again, we're going to talk about denial, which is don't even negotiate, I am lying. So in other words, denial can be consciously or not consciously. Hey, reach out, make it a great day. We will talk with you live again in 2 weeks.
yeah.